time and be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist. Joey B has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today in the studio, as usual, my good friend, Inspector Dave. And Inspector Dave, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Joey B. Well, we're going to talk about lightning today. I know we have a story that you like to tell that inspired us to even put this all together today. So tell us that story.
Well, you know, Inspector Dave, and I know we'll get into your expertise because you've been there for many years following storms. But very recently, because of the documentary we were filming, and I'm back home here a little bit, and I'm able to go back to coaching. And I was on the field maybe a month ago, and I am telling you, again, reading storms is part of what I do in the outdoors and all. A storm came in, a storm blew in that is unlike any other that I have seen in the East. I've seen storms like this out in the West. And I am telling you, when the storm came in, the lightning was raging. I was looking at all the other teams. There must have been about 12 other teams. This is a huge county park that everyone practices in. There were runners out there in cross country and everything going on. And I am telling you that not one coach was doing the right thing for his team. And we're talking about like hundreds of young adults out there on fields. And I thought that we should address this right away. So here's our show, all about lightning. So my first question to you, Inspector Dave, your definition, what's lightning?
Well, lightning is just the light that we see when the Earth is trying to rebalance itself electrically. The Earth's always trying to get itself back to a neutral position, and it wants to get the negative and the positives in balance.
And very simply, and you know this, if you do a little friction and rubbing, you're going to get, you know, I would talk about like static electricity, and you see that little shock that goes on, and you're talking about electrons, and as electrons are moving, and in the simplest terms, that's what you're really seeing when you see lightning. Now, what type of lightning is there?
Well, there are three basic types that we deal with. First is cloud to cloud, which is from one cloud to another up in the sky. Intracloud, which is within the cloud itself. And we also call these like heat lightning or summer night lightning. And we'll see these, it's up in the sky. There's usually no thunder associated with it. It's pretty. I mean, it can be quite a great show to watch. And those are the ones that really entertain us a lot. But the other types of lightning is cloud to ground. And that's the one that's studied the most because that's the one that can really impact us the most because you have lightning coming down or going up from the ground, depending on which book you read. And that's where people and buildings and trees and things, you know, can suffer damage from a lightning strike.
And we will actually discuss some stories that go along with the types of lightning that you're describing there. And as you said, some of these shows, and in essence, it becomes a show. Some of them are really beautiful to take a look at. So here's my next question, Inspector Dave. What is the study of lightning called?
That's called fulminology.
Now, fulminology, think about this. I've had a million meteorology classes in all my environmental science stuff. Blah, blah, blah. I have never, ever, ever heard that term. But hey, you're the master. I'm going to take that from you. But here's the important or a cool fact. How often does lightning strike?
Well, according to what I've researched, it's 40 to 50 times a second around the world. So there's always lightning striking somewhere.
Well, again, and weather is a constant, you know, moving. So as we go through some of them are scientific facts and some fun facts as we get really into lightning and how we really, you know, we'll position ourselves in the safety side. So how many fatal strikes occur in the U.S. each year?
It's been averaging about 51 a year, historically, or really over the last 10 or 20 years.
Well, you know something? 51, and I would say right now, and hopefully by the time people finish listening to the show, that hopefully we can reduce that number by quite a bit. Because again, the nice thing is we have quite a number of listeners around the U.S., actually, and around the world as well. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. Now, all the people, what are the chances of actually being struck by lightning?
On average, it's 1 in 960,000. And that's actually better odds than winning a lottery. And of course, it would vary depending if you're more of an outdoors person, your odds go up. If you're an indoor person or always in a safe area, odds go down. But the average is there. So it can happen pretty regularly.
And again, our odds goes up because the name of the show is Joey B Outdoors. And, you know, me in the outdoors, you, because we do fish together, we do kayak together, and then you're in the organic garden all that time. So our numbers go up, but by going up, we also will be safe. And we'll get to the safety side of things in a little bit. And Inspector Dave, one of the stories I wanted to share with you is about Montana. When I was doing my research on grizzly bears out there, the saying in Montana is, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes, it'll change. And not an exaggeration, I'd be on the top of one Rockies, you know, I'm on the peak, and I got my backpack with all my research gear on with all the other scientists, and you could see cumulonimbus clouds rising up over the next peak, and as quick as you could drop your pack, put all of your winter gear on, in 5 minutes later, it's either hailing or it's snowing, a blizzard, it's down to 30 degrees, and 5 minutes later, it's back in the 70s, you're putting your shorts and t-shirt back on, and you're hiking out in snow. So you've got to learn how to read weather, and that's really what, as we go along with the show today, you know, so some fun facts, but learning how to read the weather, you know, reading storms is important, and, you know, it's a matter of, I guess, learning from folks like you and I, but it's also a matter of being out there and making good decisions out there. So let's go to lightning in Montana, and then we can go on. I was in one storm in the top of the Rockies. It was raining so hard, and I saw lightning strike the top of a tree and obliterate it. You know me. I am not a TV guy. I'm not a movie guy, even though I do lots of that stuff. I see lightning bolt hit the top of a tree, and it obliterated it like it was science fiction. In that same storm, I saw a lightning bolt hit the ground in the top of a field. There was actually a small little field in the top of the Rockies here. It hit it, and it broke into hundreds of lightning bolts, and it just shot all over. The next morning, the storm was gone. I looked at the tree. It was obliterated. I looked at the field, and there were burn marks. There was a major burn mark, and then these tiny little burn marks, all those little small lightning bolts went out from there. So just by that story, Inspector Dave, we've got to talk about the safety side of things. But first, a few cool questions for you. So what types of strikes are there?
Well, there's two basic types, the direct strikes and the adjacent strikes. And it's just like it sounds. A direct would be like that tree that you saw got hit. That would be a direct strike where it blew the tree apart. The adjacent one was if, let's say, you're standing near an object that gets hit, a tall object, and that bounces off or it breaks up like you mentioned, and that's an adjacent strike, but it's the electricity from the lightning is still trying to find its way to ground. That's what it's trying to do, trying to get to the ground, and it may have to find an indirect path, and if you happen to be in that path, then that's when you're going to suffer the consequences.
All right, so now, what is astrophobia?
Okay, that's the fear of lightning. And we're talking about that unnecessary fear where it's like you cower in the basement every time there's lightning. All of us should have certainly a respect for lightning. Maybe not a fear of it, but a really good grounded respect.
And I think as you say that, and the importance is as we become educated, we learn how to respect, and that diminishes any fear that we should have, because we should not have any. Now, who is your good friend, Roy C. Sullivan?
Well, Roy C. Sullivan is the Guinness record holder for being struck by lightning the most number of times that are documented, which is 7.
So I think about this. I don't know about you. Like when my little niece was growing up and I would say to her, when she'd make a mistake, I'd say, well, how many times do you have to run into the brick wall before you realize that it hurts? And sooner or later, my niece would go, hey, I walked around the wall today, meaning that she figured it out. So obviously, Roy Sullivan here, he had a little problem going on, struck 7 times. Where did he live?
Well, he was in Virginia, and he was a forest ranger at the Shenandoah Park. Now, we talked about people that are in the outdoors would have a higher average of being struck, but he was definitely trained in how to avoid lightning. One of the stories was he was driving his truck, and it just came in through the window. He should have had the window up, but he was driving through his truck and was struck. And there was times, even when he was a child working on a farm, that he says he was struck, but there's no documentation. But the seven strikes that they have were fully documented, and he, you know, had scalp injuries and burns and other things that occurred there. He's since passed on from other issues there. But you know, he's the guy. I don't know anybody else who has that record right now.
Well, you know what? I don't know if it's a record that we are looking to achieve. And I don't know what the real number is, but there's a golfer somewhere down in Florida that was struck like three or four times. And I always say it this way. Think about this. You're in the middle of a field. You have a metal rod in your hands, the golf club, and you're going to raise it above your head in a lightning storm. Well, guess what?
And one other thing, too, that Roy found, which is a kind of a sad part of the story, is that he found that a lot of people did not want to be out with him anymore in the outdoors. He found people were reluctant to go hiking with him or going out in a boat or doing anything because they just felt that he was like a natural attractant or a lightning rod. So he became sort of isolated at times from other people.
And that is sad because, hey, we should be have compassion for everyone. So let's talk about the sun's surface and compare it to lightning. So how hot is a bolt of lightning?
Well, they estimate that it's five times as hot as the surface of the sun.
And think about this. The sun's surface, 50,000 degrees F. So if you get hit by a bolt of lightning, I'd say right now that it's a pretty hot deal.
Right. You're going to get a burn or it's going to ignite a fire possibly. You know, a lot of things can happen from that type of energy going into such a pinpoint area.
All right, so now let's talk now. And, you know, so we gave a bunch of cool facts, but we'll get into the serious side of things a little bit here. So, all right, when should we begin to take action? So, you know, so we can provide ourselves and our family and friends with safety.
Well, most of the actions that you should have are in advance. You should have an idea that there's going to be thunderstorms in your area where you're going to be for that particular day or that week. And that would be through your different weather stations that are out there, whether it's a local station or a national station. There's apps you can have in your phone now that gives you the warnings and the watches. Whenever there's a watch up, that just means that storms are a possibility. When a warning is posted, a storm warning, that means that a storm is imminent or it's very close by and you have to take direct action on that. So one of the ways is just being weather aware, you know, knowing how to read the sky a little bit, looking for dark, fast-moving clouds coming towards you, hearing thunder in the distance. That's a big indicator that a storm is moving your way. And also, a lot of the fields now have these special lightning detection systems, the sporting fields, and where they system will detect that there's energy in the air and it gives out a siren or some type of verbal warning to the players on the field and the coaches so that they can take action and clear the field.
And as you mentioned that, and goes back to the original story I told you about what was going on that field with all those teams. And my suggestion to the county was that they should put one of the alert systems out there, they're called lightning detection systems, and it should be there. Now, the law also says that once you see lightning or hear thunder, you must stay off a field, an athletic field, for 1/2 hour. I am letting you know that storm blew in, blew out, and probably in 20 minutes, teams were still on the field or went back on the field before what law says. So again, we're trying to educate people that are out there. And one of the other comments that you made, and you said about reading the weather, I was out in the Sedge Islands with Coach Bania. He and I are fishing. And we're kayaking from island to island, and we're into some really big fish, and it's like the bonanza day, many fish, big fish going on and on. And I look out in the corner of the sky, there's a little dot, and it's pitch black. And I go, Coach, we got to go right now. And he said, no. And again, it's just like you get caught up in this fishing frenzy, and this man was an Eagle Scout. And I go, Coach, look at that corner. We jump into kayaks. We paddle from the islands back to the mainland as hard as we could. And I am telling you, within maybe 10 minutes, because again, you have the ocean right there, the storm blew in and it was crazy and amazing. And a bolt of lightning came down, thunder right above our heads as we were getting out of the water. So it's like you got to be able to read it, see it, be gone. Now, what is that people say is a bolt out of the blue?
It's exactly what it says. It's when The conditions are just absolutely right for a lightning bolt to occur. There may not even be a storm nearby. It's just and it's something that's hard to defend against because now you're really not looking up. You don't have any really indicators visually that something could happen like that. A lot of times you'll see it where the storm has passed on and the sun has come out and the sky is blue, but the storm is still moving away from you. But electrically, there's still a lot of action going on in the atmosphere. And a bolt out of the blue can be really scary because you're totally unprepared for it.
See, now here you go. That's something that we can't prepare, but all the rest we can. So this next question, and I'll add a little bit to it because I know that you have the answer. So let's talk about it. What's the flash to boom ratio?
Well, that's the amount of time between the lightning flash that you see it to when you hear the report from the thunder. And usually it's 5 seconds equals 1 mile. So for every 5 seconds between the flash and the boom, it equals 1 mile away.
And you can actually, and I'll say this because I've used this quite often in the outdoors. It is accurate. You just count real slow. You know, 1, 2, and if you go real slow, and if you're up to 7, well, then it's about 1.5 miles away. You know, so it is a good predictor of how far away the storm is, but we should be preparing all the time. So what can we do to protect ourselves?
Well, the main thing is if you start hearing any of the warnings or the noises, the thunder in the distance, you're seeing lightning or your alerts are going off, you want to get into a shelter, a solid shelter if you can, and you want to stay there 30 minutes past the time the storm has passed, which you talked about for the field evacuation, that it should last for that long, and also for the bolts out of the blue and everything else. So just a good, sturdy shelter.
And so once we're inside, what are we doing?
Well, then you want to protect yourself in the shelter now, too, in the event that the shelter, a lightning strike occurs near it. You want to stay off any corded devices, you know, telephones, computers, things like that, because the electricity from that can come back through the wiring and give you a jolt. You want to stay away from the windows and any openings. You should have the windows closed because if you have a draft or where the air is moving through or being sucked through, it can help draw that electricity towards that opening. You want to stay off the porch. You don't want to be out there sightseeing. And avoiding plumbing and concrete because, again, those are conductors of electricity if a strike was to occur on that structure.
And it's as you're describing about staying off of corded devices, and this is going back to the early Xbox days when they're all hardwired in, and you know my good friends, the Marino brothers, they were downstairs in their basement. There's a tree right outside their house, right, you know, next to where they were. They were playing a video game. Lightning struck that tree, went through the root system into the electrical devices in their house. And if you ever seen, and again, I'm not a movie guy, but the people talk about the movie Back to the Future when the guy got blown back, they actually sort of got hit by the energy and were flipped backwards. They said it was amazing that both of them were flipped backwards by the energy. Not injured, but very close to it. So as you give that bit of advice, here's a story, but it really, you know, sort of bangs home that point. Now, a lot of people in the outdoors have some misconceptions about being in a car or using a car for shelter. So tell us about it.
Well, a car is a last resort. If you're not near a solid shelter somewhere then and a car is nearby, that can be a place to get cover, at least from the rain and the wind. It's a metal top car is what we're talking about, not a convertible top car. And the car actually acts as a Faraday cage. So it's actually dispersing the electric from around you, so it's not going to get to you. And the tires themselves are not insulators. That's really the big misnomer about cars. And you want to make sure you keep the window closed also, because again, you don't want to draw any drafts into the car, you know, that might pull the electricity in.
And I think it's important because as you described that, many people think that, oh, the car is insulated with the tires, and we know that that is not true. So, all right, so that's being in a car, in a house. So what do we do if we're outside away from a shelter?
The main thing is you want to stay away from things that are tall. You want to stay away from trees, flagpoles, because they're higher up, and the electricity is looking, and the lightning is looking for the first place it can find that has a direct path to ground, so it's going to go to highest point first, and then it starts hunting around. For lower areas, metal fences, don't be standing next to a cyclone fence. It's all metal, may be going the other side of the yard. You might even see the lightning strike occurring. curbs, a lot of the older curbs you'll see in some areas have metal stripping along the edge of the curb. So, and that can go down, you know, a block or two away before there's a break. So you could have a hit further down and it's coming back along that metal piece on the curb. Power lines you want to stay away from, windmills. Even I was reading an article recently down in Florida. There was a firefighter who was, they were going on a response, and there was a metal gate, the access gate, security gate for a complex, and he went over to open the gate up so the fire truck could go through, and right at that point, there was a lightning strike, an adjacent lightning strike that did itself. It went through the fence, and it did conduct over to him, and he was injured.
And that's a scary one, and it's funny, and you mentioned windmills. There are a lot of windmills, because we have wind farms, but just farmers looking for extra energy sources. And on farms, as you travel across the country, you start to see more and more windmills across our country, and that's pretty neat. Now, what else should we look for when we're outside?
Well, you have to think about a storm, not just the lightning, but the other components of it. Certainly heavy rain, if you have a thunderstorm that comes upon you really quick, you want to make sure you don't go in a ditch, because if there's a flash flood going on from that storm, now you're going to drown. So you stop the electric, but now you're in a water problem. You want to stay off of mountaintops. Obviously, another high point. Any cliffs or overhangs is kind of a natural thing. I want to go under like an overhang. But if something happens, that overhang that falls apart, you're going to get hit with rock that can fall down. And it can conduct electricity, the stone a little bit. And also, anything that can catch fire. You don't want to go in anything that's combustible. Like, you don't want to go in the three little pigs in the straw hut, you know, or something like that, because that's something that can catch fire. So think about that, combustibility, and the side hazards that you have from a storm, too. Wind, that it's a sturdy structure, not going to blow over in the wind, not going to collapse, and then that flash flooding risk.
All right, so now we spoke about, you know, inside, outside. All right, now, what do we do if we're on water?
Well, then you hope that luck is with you on a particular day like that. You want to get out of pools right away. You have a backyard pool or a municipal pool. Again, hearing any of the warnings, just like a field, you should be out of that water immediately. And then if you're in a boat, you want to get to land as soon as you can. Try to get to a structure. But if not, then you've got to, out in the boat, you want to stay low in the boat. Find a dry spot so you won't be conducting electricity if something happens. And stay away from the mast and put down your fishing rods. Okay, seems
like,
obvious.
Like the golfer. Put it down. Now, when we had filmed you and I on the front porch with Joey B TV, and anybody who wants to watch that, you can go to joeyb.tv, joeyb.tv. You could also tweet me at Joey B Outdoors. We spoke about this other positioning. So if we are outside, how do we position ourselves? What do we do?
Well, we do not want to lay down, because then you're putting more of your body in contact with the earth. So you're becoming a better conductor. You're trying to make everything else around you a better conductor, so the lightning does not come to you. And one of the best ways I can remember, and I think it fits good in your head as a memory thing, is a basketball with feet is what you want to be.
Now, I remember you describing that and teaching that, and I learned from you when we were on the front porch filming there. And when all that happened, as the original story that, you know, led us here today, when we were on the field talking to my team, and we actually bent down, and I said, all right, basketball with feet. And they go, what, coach? I said, look, this is what we do. And there was a tree right next to us. And some guys go, let's go into the tree. And then, ain't wrong. So we were there doing what we needed to do. And they were watching every other team and every other coach doing whatever could be wrong. They were watching it. And I knew that they would be safe because of what we were doing. And I really, thanks to you on that one. Now, this is something that really does happen. What happens if your hair starts to tingle?
Well, that's an indication that there's a strike is imminent near you, and you have to take action. Hopefully, your reflexes are fast, and you realize what's happening, and you want to immediately get into that basketball with feet up on your tippy toes. And it's also important to cover your ears, because when that's happening, that strike is going to be like right there, and the noise could be deafening, where you could get ear damage also. So you want to cover your ears while you're doing your basketball with feet imitation.
Now, this is something and a question I have for you. What about lightning rods?
Well, lightning rods are always controversial. I mean, there's been plenty of them years ago installed on church steeples and in different places. In fact, they had one on my church, and we got hit by lightning, and they got a big hole in the steeple, and the fire department had to come. And it turns out the lightning rod that 10 feet of the wire wasn't there, was missing where it was supposed to ground it to earth. And that's the biggest problem with lightning rods is the maintenance of them. Like, you can put a system in and spend all kinds of money, and they still sell them nowadays. I've seen them on plenty of buildings. But it has to be maintained and tested for continuity. The connections are tight, the wires are there, so that if it does draw in the electricity, that it takes it somewhere to ground safely. And that's been a big, I remember one of your mentors, Don Bauman, used to talk about the lightning rods on the churches. And he was like, it's bad because all it does is attract the lightning even that much more to a steeple. So he was always kind of against them. I remember that, having that conversation with him. But again, you see them on commercial buildings. I don't know about putting them on houses. Again, you'd have to do your research on that. I'm not an expert on installation, but the ones that I've seen that were, people say, can it really handle the voltage and the amperage and the electricity that comes out of a lightning strike? That's always been the big scientific debate.
And as you're describing all that, I'm thinking about so many of the beautiful older buildings across America. Many of them are churches where they had lightning rods put on them, and some of them 100 years ago. And, well, as you just mentioned, are they maintained? And if they're not maintained and there is a break somewhere, then obviously you are attracting lightning to your building. So that's something. So, and as you said, maintenance, probably with everything, and we know this, maintenance is very important. Now, what about victims? Are they electrically charged?
No, they are not. And that's a misnomer. I think a lot of people feel the person, if they touch them, they're going to get electrocuted. But that person is already, the electricity is discharged, and it would be safe to render aid to that person.
All right. And very important to understand that. Now, I have a little story to end with, but do you have any last words?
We've seen some of the fires that I've seen.
Yeah, please tell me about those fires.
So, as a fire investigator, I've seen a few really nasty storms come through. And I find a lot of the storms that are particularly problematic for us come out of the south. And it has to do, I guess, with the way the wind is tropical in nature, and there's no mountain range down there to break up that. So when they come in, I remember one particular storm came in an afternoon, a mid-afternoon in the summer, and it was like being in an artillery barrage. I mean, it was the flash to boom ratio was like non-existent. The storm actually almost, I think, formed over us or very close to over us. So it was just flash, boom, flash, boom. It's just like being like what I could imagine being on a field somewhere and being on an artillery barrage. And the rain came down so hard, the flash flooding was just crazy. And the streets were just flooded. And we were running around with the fire department, alarms all over the place, trying to get to different places. And a power wire came down in one spot. So we run over there. And we look over, and there's the guy in the gas station, like, pumping gas, like, nothing's going on. So we run over and, like, you know, just, like, screamed at the guy and turned off the power to the gas station in the event that there was a gas spill with this high-voltage line arcing across the street. It seemed like a no-brainer that he should have stopped pumping gas, but I guess they had bills to pay or whatever. So that was a nasty one. And then we had other lightning hits. That we had one around the corner from my house where the people were home in one house and they saw the lightning hit a pole, and they actually watched it travel across the wire and go into a house. And then they saw a flash inside the bedroom and the people weren't home. So we forced entry into that house, and it actually had blown out on an outlet out onto a bed and set the bed on fire and the dolls on fire in the bedroom. And a number of the houses in that quadrant had their circuit panels blown out, their fuses and their circuit breakers were all blown apart, and public service had damage with the transformers and all. So that was like a direct strike that fed around where we tell you stay off corded devices, away from windows. It does happen. Not every storm, but you get a wicked storm like that. Another particular storm we had, we were at the firehouse kind of watching a storm, and it wasn't a particularly bad storm. We're just enjoying it. And we get a call for an alarm for a house hit by lightning. We're like, huh? And so we go over, and it's only up over the hill, like a quarter mile or so from the firehouse. And we get down there, and there was all kinds of damage around the area. The traffic lights were out. The education group that was in that area, all the computers got blown out. And one particular house had a fire in the basement, a really stubborn fire that we had to get to. And so we were able, the house was totaled from that, and we found, as we went around later, we actually found the foundation in the back of the house where it was blown out, where the lightning had actually hit there, and it had gone into the house. And there was a couple of mitigating circumstances in what occurred. There was a lot of old steam pipes, metal pipes in the basement in the area. So again, the electricity was just looking for, like, here's a great ground. Wow, I got some cement, I got grounding, I got pipe, I got everything that I need, and it went there. But then it just spread around the area because it was a direct hit to that space. So then the people that were home at the time said there was like sparks shooting out of the outlets inside the house. They said that was really scary. They all got out really quick. And then we also looked at the wires coming in from the street, from the utility, and the grounding wire had like a patch. They had done construction at the house, and they'd only put like a temporary wire up there. So the house was not grounded properly. And that's something that I really learned as I talked to my electrical friends about grounding all your equipment, your house, your computers, that having those grounds in place are so important to protect things from electricity, from lightning that may occur either on your house or on the property next door, across the street or whatever. You got to have those grounds in place. They're very, very important. And it protects you. If you're on a device, it may protect you from being electrocuted. So those were some of the big fires we saw. Garages hit. A few times we had garages hit. And there was fire set on the roofs from that super hot strike we had there. So it's nasty stuff. And you'll see plenty of forest fires out in the woods are initiated by lightning strikes. That's one of the natural ways that nature works to create forest fires, because they can be good things at times. So lightning, yeah, I'm impressed by it. I respect it. And I know to prepare for it every time.
And hey, I thank you for those stories. I thank you for the knowledge. And I thought a great way of ending this is one of my great friends, Doug Meredith, lives up on one of the Finger Lakes or the Great Lakes, Oneida Lake. Very beautiful. He lives out on his home is out on a point. And when we see a storm approaching, and we're talking about 17 miles away across the lake, you'll actually sit out there and see, so to speak, as you're talking earlier in the show, you see the lightning show going on. But then as it begins to approach, we're back in the house. He's got a beautiful A-frame. It's all glass enclosed. And you're enjoying nature from a safe place, in a safe place, doing safe things. And that's what today's show is all about. So, Inspector Dave, I just want to thank you for sharing your knowledge, sharing your stories, so that everyone out there in America can be safe.
Okay. And good luck to everybody out there, and follow those rules and take a CPR course also.
Thanks, Inspector Dave. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.
Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. Joey B. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure.
That was awesome.